Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I'm so delighted to introduce my friend, an internationally renowned celebrity dermatologist, Dr. Shino Bey Aguilera. Welcome, Shino.
Thank you. It's so great to always be around you. I always learn so much from you, and we always know how to have fun together. So it's a treat for me to be able to share these moments with you.
It's definitely a treat. You are internationally known and one of my favorites on social media. How, and we're just coming out of coronavirus, how is life for you right now?
Well, it's been really a roller coaster of emotion from what I feel in my workplace and then my personal life. I'm a person that don't watch the news. I try not to, because usually I stopped watching the news after 9/11 because it really affected me in a very negative way. I'm an empath. I feel everything. I feel people's energy. And now, you know, medically speaking, we have mirror neurons. And whatever you're watching, there's a chemical reaction in your body, which is almost like it's really happening to you. And that's not healthy when you think about it. So I really got depressed, and I started taking Xanax to be able to go to bed and sleep. I took Xanax to get on a plane. Mm-hmm. And if that wasn't me, I've never been a person that, you know me very well. I'm very all natural, very holistic approach of everything. And I was taking at that time a class in the Kabbalah Center in Robertson in LA. And the teacher that day says, like, if you wanna change your life, just don't watch the news for 2 weeks and see how you feel. Right. And I did that, and I never went back. I mean, I always know what's going on in the world because everybody's gonna tell you, because bad news travel fast. Yeah. But I don't need to see the data and the details and the images of people jumping out of building. It affected me negatively, so I live in a little bubble in my own world. But it has affected me because I worry about my mother. I worry about my father in LA. I don't worry about myself, but I worry about them.
Yeah.
I don't want to die, you know, not just yet.
It's very stressful, but I want to talk more about this idea of having neurotransmitters that mirror, so that when you're visualizing something, your brain's actually going through it on some level. It's much the same as the idea of athletes who visualize their performance the night before, because their motor neurons and their ocular neurons and everything rehearse. And so they have a preformed memory. So tell me a little bit more about that mirroring idea.
Well, the mirror neurons, you know, this was discovered like in the 80s, I believe, with macaque monkeys. And the experiment was like they were trying to study what would happen on the brain, just like behavior modification on monkeys. So basically what they did, they have like all these electrodes on the brain, and they will give them bananas. And then when the monkey would eat the banana, certain parts of the brain lit up. So one day by accident, you know, the monkey, one of the people on the study, this doctor, just took up one of the bananas and started eating it. And all of a sudden, the same areas on the brain of the monkey lit up, just like if the monkey was the one eating the banana. Mm-hmm. And that was the discovery of mirror neurons, which all humans have. That's what gives us our empathy. That's how we learn as baby language and all the type of behaviors. So we all have gone to the movies and watched a movie where you cry because something sad happened in the movie, or you were scared because something really, really horrible was happening in the movie, like a scary movie. Mm-hmm. And then you can see that nothing is happening to you yet. Your body chemistry is responding as if it's happening to you.
Right.
And the problem with that you internalize all this chemistry is happening to you, and it really is detrimental to your health, because you are rising your level of cortisol, and cortisol was created to save the body. Rather, you see a lion, you use superhuman powers, and it was to save the physical body. But unfortunately, modern men, with the lifestyle and with technology. Everybody can reach to you on your palm of your hand and stress you. We have sustained level of cortisol, and that's detrimental. So that's why people should understand that watching things that doesn't feel good inside your body is not good for your body.
You know what? I stopped watching scary movies a long time ago because it just makes me so freaked out. But I fully feel that I think almost everyone through quarantine has gone through a phase where they realize that the news was just bogging them down psychologically and mentally and putting them in a bad mental space. So I also have pretty much stopped watching the news and mainly just reading headlines just to keep up to date. But it's a tragedy because the news has amplified things, and such minute-to-minute crisis sometimes makes things look worse than they actually are. Because when we came out of our homes to start seeing patients, I don't know about you, but I had a lot of fear with my first couple patients, thinking like, am I crazy? Am I doing the right thing? Is beauty that important? And then, yes, it is that important. And yes, it's important to try to go back to normal. So gradually, the more we've seen people, the more we realize this is just the normal practice of medicine in our day-to-day lives. It's no different from when we first saw our first HIV patient or hepatitis patient, or just being really careful and dedicated to our art. So I think it's just, you know, that fear of the media, it just puts you in a wrong headspace.
Yeah, and we all know, like, you know, like, I mean, I have people that you do too, you know, you're in California, Los Angeles, but have people in the media, and you know, it's a job. But the thing is that they also have bosses and people that direct them, and they have to report the way they are told to do. Everything is curated. So where your reality is completely different according with which channel you watch. Like, for example, you know, whether you like or pressing or not, I don't get into politics, but if you watch Fox News, it's the best thing that ever happened to the whole world. It's just amazing. But if you watch CNN, it's the worst thing that ever happened to America. So you live a different reality according to which channel you're tuning in. And that's why I said to my patients and my families, whatever you put your attention to, that's your reality. So that's why I create my little world, my little bubble. I read the headlines. I have, you know, the Zoom meetings that we have. That's why I created it, because I want to just bounce ideas against people that I trust, you know?
Yeah. And my for our listeners that don't know, so Sheena was responsible for collecting an international gathering of thought leaders, key opinion leaders, and really great human beings from around the planet. And all through quarantine, he had these weekly kind of meetings to just bolster everybody's spirit and to share information. And it was just an awesome experience because it really brought some light into a dark situation where we felt isolated and alone. We were able to hear other countries, what's going on and how people are surviving, and tips and tricks. It was really thoughtful for you to put that together. And just really brought a welcome ray of, like, you don't feel so alone when you realize every other colleague is in the same position and that we're all going to survive this if we think together.
Yeah, it's so strange because, you know, sometimes you feel like it is happening to you, but with this COVID-19, it's like it happened to every single human being in the world. And if you take that into consideration, then all of a sudden you don't feel so alone. And unfortunately, for the human experience, sometimes it takes a catastrophe or a pandemic or something as terrible as 9/11 for everybody to feel that, in fact, we are one human experience, that we are one human race. And it's so ironic that everything was about, you know, at least in the United States, about COVID-19, which made us all feel as one human experience. And then all of a sudden we have the riots because black and white, right? Which to me, I always told my patients that 2020 is the year of clear vision, like 2020, right? 2020. Yeah. Is the future. 2020. But I never in 1,000 years imagined in what shape or form this message was going to be told to us, which is a huge pandemic, and then this racial conflict, right?
You would have never guessed that one would lead to the other, or that that's what would be amplified. But it is so metaphysical that everyone on the planet experienced the same kind of process of grieving, stress, anxiety, like fear, and then slowly seeing rays of light, and then really feeling unified, like we've all been through like a real reevaluation of what's important in our lives. I know I have. I know I have decided that I'm not going to work as hard. I'm going to have more focus and dedication to quality and family, and just like stop running the rat race and stop trying to succeed in someone else's eyes and just really think about what I want for success and for life.
So beautiful to hear. I'm so happy to hear that from you, because, you know, like I said that before, you get on this train of success, right? And start slower, because we all start from nothing, and then you start getting steam, and all of a sudden it's going really, really, really fast, but you haven't stopped anywhere. And to tell you the truth, when you're very successful, well-respected in the whole industry globally, sometimes it can be very lonely at the top. So that, I feel I'm 100% agreement with you, that I need to restructure my life and stop thinking that for me to be relevant in the industry, I have to show up to everything.
Yeah, you know, you do it. Literally, you get invited to every conference, every meeting, and like, it is exhausting physically to come. And when you give your all, you really are performing, and you feel like you're doing a great thing. You make so many great connections, but then you come home and you have no energy left to give to the very important people in your life, because you've just been like, you know, like an actor out there portraying all the knowledge, all the energy. And like, and then you're left with that tiredness. You can't even take care of your own health and your own needs. So every injector, I think everyone listening feels that too. Like, you go to work and give it your all, and then what do you have left over when you come home for your family?
Nothing. And time goes so fast. I tell you, you know, and I'm honest, and it's so, I feel so ashamed to be able to say this, but if I were to go to Panama, where I grew up, and I were to run into my cousins and my uncles that I grew up with, and they basically raised me, I will not recognize them on the street. I will not know who they are. And that shows how long I've been gone from my family, because I came here to this country to become a doctor, and I worked really, really hard. My life being just, nothing being handed to me, but I was very laser focused, and that was my goal. And I have missed birthdays and weddings and funerals and everything. Mm-hmm. Everything just to get where I am. And then for what? My uncles and relatives are dying now. They're on there. I do not recognize them. I could not recognize them. So I need to go back to that. I need to, you know, it's just, it wasn't right. And it took a virus to wake me up.
It really did, to wake all of us up, because we all get caught up in the Instagram glamour and like looking at beautiful influencers and looking at bags, purses, clothing, you know, cars, whatever it is that it comes with that life that's like the success definition. But then being in isolation for 3 months, you realize that I'm happy wearing like my sweatpants and just going in the backyard, sitting in the sun and just hanging out with people I love. And like, I don't really need to be buying stuff all the time. I don't need people's recognition. And also these moments are so brief. Like, I realize as soon as quarantine is over, my 20-year-olds are going to run out of this house so fast and get their own life going. So it's really been a good reset for everybody. And even in terms of like how the office functions, I think the idea that we went to virtual consults for a little while, I don't know if you did.
Yes.
That's been really interesting to have such a wide reach, because we saw people from all across the country. So that was really a nice change in the office too. And we really let people work from home as much as possible. We focused on a lot of projects, you know, let people pick their interest within our field and just focus down on that. It was fun.
That's great.
It's been really fun. Tell me a little bit about how it feels to be like a world recognized celebrity dermatologist, because every meeting I go to, you're always swamped by fangirls and guys wanting to be in pictures of you. So how does that feel? I get a little of that, but not nearly as much as you.
No, it's nice to feel recognized for your work, you know, because I have worked really hard to be where I am, and like I told you earlier, nothing's been given to me. So it's nice to be recognized. And I'm better now. I feel anxiety, you know, sometimes when that happens. Like my first time in Monaco, you know, I've never been there, and I didn't know that people knew me outside United States and Colombia and Brazil. And I gave my lecture, and I came out, and I told Alejandro, my lecture was just 10 minutes from like 11 to 11:10. And I said, okay, you know, I meet you for lunch at noon because I just give my lecture and I'm free until the next day. And when I came out of there, there's 14,000 people that come to this meeting. And there was a line of people to take pictures with me. And that never ever happened to me like that. I mean, I take pictures, you see, but, yeah. And I didn't leave there until 3 p.m. So that was very overwhelming and gave me a little bit of anxiety, but I have learned now to deal with that. The other thing about me is that I have never been able to enjoy my success because I have kind of, and this happens to a lot of people, this almost this imposter syndrome that I have. And it has to do because I grew up so poor in Panama. Like, people don't even know where I come from. People may look at me and think that I come from money, but I grew up super poor and raised in ways that nobody should be raised. And bad thing happens to me, that anything bad that you can imagine that can happen to somebody in an undeserved area happened to me. So I always felt that because of that, if people will find out who I really was in terms of where I came from, where the region I came from, who my grandmother was, what she did for a living, people will not treat me the same. Because unfortunately, in third world countries, it didn't matter how successful I would be, people will throw that on my face to bring me down. So that's something that I have dealt a lot myself, that I don't. But in another way, the way I play to go, you know, it keeps me humble. It allows me never to forget where I came from. So it's the yin and yang, you know. I finally, the reason I'm talking freely about it, because, you know, I'm going to be 52 in November. And 50 is about being authentic. Yeah. And I am authentic and I want to be authentic. This is who I am. This is where I came from. And if you don't like me, that's fine, because there's a lot of people out there that would love me. And I don't have to be afraid. It's like being gay, right? I was in the closet for a long time, right? And I still kept myself in the closet for my father. And I told my dad, at 50, I'm not gonna, you lived your life, I have to live mine. And I don't want people not to know me, like lying to you and sneaking away and pretending to be something that I'm not. So 50s is about being authentic and on it, everything.
When did you first come out being gay and being public about it?
So I accepted myself about being gay about age 27. And because
you'd finished medical school already, you were in finished residency.
An internship, I still was in the closet. Residency, I was on the closet through my first residency was family practice. In dermatology, I was already out. To my mother's side of the family, my closest friend. Mm-hmm. And then at 50, I came out to my dad's side of the family. So that being my third
person. That's a lot of years gone by.
It's a lot of baggage to carry.
Yeah, it is. It's like living two lives. So you must feel like so much relief.
100%. It's just so amazing. I always was praying that somebody would out me when I was in the closet, so everybody would know, like put it on the news, like everybody can read it. And I didn't have to deal, because coming out time after time again to every single person that you love, you always had that fear that they're not gonna love me, they're gonna neglect me. I can't bear to see the disappointment on their face. It was very, very life consuming to carry that secret
When did you come out to our industry, like in terms of like, I think now everybody's so open and accepting, and like you're very public when you give talks and things. So was that like a definite change in your speaker presence as well?
Yeah, so I just thought, I had to be authentic, you know, and if people were going to, it's just like I said, the imposter syndrome. I lived the imposter syndrome for being this poor kid, which grandma worked as a prostitute, you know, to raise the 8 children in a foreign country, which I used to be so ashamed. And I'm like, could you imagine that sometimes I'm tired doing what I do? Imagine that your job is to sleep with strangers, to raise your family. That's not a fun job, you know? I don't care if you're an infomaniac, that's not a good fun job. But she raised 8 kids and 3 grandchildren, me being one of them. So now I'm proud of her, and I don't care about saying, if somebody has a problem with that, you know, just try to do that, you know? At least she didn't give them up for adoption, and she didn't abandon them, and they all finished school, and they're good people, and they're honest, hardworking people, you know?
Yeah, and look how you turned out. You turned out amazing. Amazing and, yeah. And strong. And I think that you're a role model in many ways for physicians to live more openly with their lives, to be more relatable to patients, and to just be like, you know, to be seen and be heard. Like, we want more representation of every person, every type of person, because otherwise, how are we ever going to encourage people, young doctors who are hiding in fear that the community won't accept them? But I think aesthetics and cosmetics and dermatology is more accepting, I would say, than the average medical specialty.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I want to be a role model. I mean, I have two sons, and you know, whatever they're going to be, straight, gay, I want to make sure that one of them or the two of them are gay, that they have a good role model and they don't feel the pain that you feel when you live in fear that people are not going to love you because you're different. And I just had to do it for them and for my nieces and my nephew and all the young generation that are coming, you know?
So has that been a very complicated life then? Because you have a very lovely biologic mother of your kids who I've met, and she's a most amazing lady. Has that been difficult to manage, having family life and then having your amazing partner?
Yeah, it has been difficult to try to be there for everyone at all times. It's like a modern family, and I'm trying to, like, tomorrow I'm going driving there to spend time with them. So everything needs to be scheduled because, unfortunately, in this country, they keep kids really busy with other projects and responsibilities and standardized tests and all these things. So when I'm available, they may not be available. So we try to make time for each other and go on vacation together. But it's been difficult to be there the way I'm supposed to be there. And that's with every single member of my family. You talk to my sister, I don't know if you met, she lives in LA. I grew up in LA, in Glendale, so my family is there. My family resent the fact that I've been gone forever. Mm. You know, I don't give it much time to anyone because I wanted to be successful.
What do you think about how Instagram has changed your life in this last 2 years? I think you have such a lot of Instagram followers. You understand this wave of sort of success and realizing the power of your digital voice. Was there a moment when you started to kind of realize that you have a lot of power with your platform?
Yeah, no, I mean, like recently I started to see that just because I only opened my Instagram because a friend of mine told me, you need to share whatever you talk to us when, because I meditate, and then whatever I channel, start writing, I would just share it with my patient, my friends, but you know, you should use Instagram, Facebook to write these things. And I didn't want to do it because I'm so private. And at that time, you know, I wasn't completely out and just like always on the back of my head, like if somebody sees something and put 2 and 2 together. Yeah, so I was a little bit afraid of that. But then when I wrote my book, the editor says you need to use social media because it's like the cheapest way to advertise your book. And I said, okay, fine. So I did it for that. But then all of a sudden, I started getting messages and people saying that, oh, you wrote that for me, or whatever you wrote really helped me today. So then I just felt like maybe that was my calling, to use the social media platform to just help people to feel better about themselves or share my thoughts. And then it started growing really, 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 really fast. And now it's really overwhelming. I don't know, because you have more followers than I do. Yeah. And I don't, because it's an email now with the DMs, and I have to answer to pretty much all of them. The one that I don't answer is the one that asked me if I want more followers, because I'm like, no, let it be organic, because right now with all the followers that I have, it's unmanageable, you know. But it is a powerful tool, and with that power, you have a lot of responsibilities. That's why I lecture a lot about content and the content that we put to attract patients, mainly the millennials, because I feel so bad for millennials. Like, they were raised during the 2008 recession. They all finished school with student loans, and now there's no jobs and they get hit with COVID-19. So I feel like they're a very fragile, very, very fragile generation, and there's a lot of them. And we need to make sure that what we do is to make people feel better about themselves. So some colleagues out there from all over the world, they use a different technique to attract them, which is bank on insecurities. And instead of tell them, I am all for fixing everything. You know, if you don't like it, fix it. And anything you want to fix that's going to make you feel attractive, I'm all for that. But you see, making sure that when you do talk to this young generation is to make sure that they have self-love and self-acceptance. You can alter all you want, but you need to have self-love, self-acceptance. And I don't think a lot of people think about that, especially in places where they're just like a revolving door. They just want numbers, in and out, in and out. I know with your patients, my patients, it's relationships that we build, right? Your patients are going to get older with you, and you have a different conversation for every decade. But places where they're just doing this to them, they're not sending the right message.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. I have three daughters and one son, and I never want them to, I want them to love themselves first. Like, yes, you have access to all the syringes and all the surgeries that you could ever want, but you're not going to be happy if you don't love yourself and you don't understand where your insecurities are coming from. And they're a very vulnerable generation, I would agree with you. And it's so easy to be seduced by beautiful images on Instagram, so easy to be deceived by influencers who have doctored their images and literally have injected everything to look natural. So I think they're very self-critical, this generation. Like, yeah, you got to bring out a microscope to see some of the flaws that they point out in their faces. And like, they send pictures, sometimes people send us DMs with like, oh, I hate my face, it's so disfigured. And then I open the image and it's this very beautiful, normal looking, lovely lady, you know? So I think we're so self-critical. And I think that your message, if people haven't seen Sheena's Instagram, you should definitely check it out. It's very inspirational, very holistic, and it really it gets you centered. It talks about thinking about your soul and your spirit, and then the forces around you that are forming you every day. The positivity is really impressive. I think, tell me about your book. I didn't even know you had written a book.
Yeah, I see. I think there's a couple of, well, this is the Spanish version. It says Ser Joven. In English, is Be Useful. And I wrote it, actually, I wrote it before my time. I was nobody when I wrote this book. I mean, I was just out of, just opening my place here. I work for a group and I open my own place. So it was before its time. And I didn't have, that's when I got my social media. But the book is everything that you need to know to stay youthful, but it's a spiritual book at the same time. It's kind of like you want to know everything about the fillers and the lasers and the neurotoxins. It is there, but it is also about self-love, self-acceptance, and to give my patients a spiritual facelift. Mm-hmm. And it was all about, because, you know, that what prompted me to write that book was this beautiful 80-year-old lady, and she came and she just had a meltdown. And she has such a beautiful eyes. And yes, she looked, she was elderly, but such a beautiful. And she was crying and saying that she was ugly and she was old. She felt like she looked like a witch. And my heart broke, because I remember my grandma getting older and my aunts, and they never spoke about the aging process like that. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know, I don't want to be her when I cannot fix this, or, you know, I don't want to feel like I'm ugly, or, you know, everything that she said that day, I had a knot on my throat and I feel like an elephant just sat on my chest. And I said, you know what, maybe I can write something to give people information how to stay useful, if that is important. Because I believe that vanity in a healthy amount is important, because it keeps you healthy. You know, if you don't brush your teeth, or, you know, take a shower, eventually you're going to get a disease.
Yeah.
But people should love themselves at every decade. And I think that's what we do. I say that we don't do life savings procedures, but we do life changing procedures. We do things that make people feel well. And when people get sick, let's see, if you get a cold and you go to the doctor is going to give you a prescription or not, or you get pharyngitis or a pink eye, you're not sick for the rest of your life. So you get well from that. We do life-changing procedures that affect every single waking hours of their life. So when they closed us down and they called us that aesthetic people are non-essential, you know, that really hit hard, because we are essential. Mm-hmm. We are essential because we make people feel better the minute that they wake up and they look in the mirror until they go to bed, every waking hour. So we are definitely essential.
That was so painful when they said that. And I really felt that our leadership and our societies and our industries did not step up for us. And they should have said, it's an essential service. We administer medications, FDA approved drugs, and we're on treatment plans with patients. And like what happens in the privacy of the exam room, like it's still an essential service. It's so important for people to show up for themselves every day and put effort into their appearance and presentation. And like, if nothing else, coronavirus showed us that when you stay home, slouch around and don't take care of yourself and just like look blah, you feel like crap. And when you show up for yourself and you invest in yourself and you're like putting some effort, you really, it motivates you. It changes a part of your person. So yeah, I was kind of sad that nobody in our industry, all of our different leaders and presidents of all the societies, didn't step up and say, like, we need to see patients. Like, if you can do Botox for neurologic migraine patients, why can't you be doing it for everybody else that needs to come in and get it? You know?
I think what happens is, like, we kind of feel like that maybe people will judge us because, right? And people just stood behind. But no, listen, like while we were closed, like a lot of people would not go to the emergency room or go to the doctor's appointments. To this day, they don't. Yeah. You know, and they're dying, or their medical conditions, because they're afraid to go to the medical doctors to do all the treatments and get the prescription. But I'm busy. Like they were calling me and DMing an email. They wanted to come. So it shows you that, yes, it may be frivolous for somebody to be thinking about your looks during a pandemic. But for some people, and history has shown that when everything is going wrong around your life, it's bad enough that we have this pandemic. And on top of that, you feel that you don't look good enough to yourself. Because when you do things like this, usually you do it for yourself, right? Yeah. Some people may do it to attract a mate or for their husband, but you know, they say that, but no. Everybody do this thing because everybody wants to feel like they're wearing their Sunday dress every day. You want to feel attractive.
It's self-preservation. It's self-identity, actually. Like you really, it was hard. It was hard during pandemic. Like you couldn't go to work. Like we weren't doing what we're passionate about every day. Is a little bit of loss of self-identity and like, who am I? What's my meaning in the world if I can't do what I like every day? And I don't even like look like myself because everything's changing. So I think it's a beautiful field, this field that we're in. I really learned to love it. I want to ask you some quick questions about injecting. So what is your number one go-to injection to make someone feel amazing about their face, if you had to pick one area?
So like one area or the product?
Anything. One area, favorite product.
So my technique with Sculptra, which has been my claim to fame, because I can really do a great imitation and preservation of the architecture of the deeper tissues, including the periosteum. So my patient that does Sculptra and with the technique that I created, super periosteal, they seem to age a lot slower than patients that just rely on gels. So I love doing that product, and that's why I love to talk about and lecture all over the world, because it's a product that's been misunderstood for a long time. Even I was a Sculptra hater, like, because I was a resident when it first came out, and I never saw anything positive. People look jacked up and they got really bruised. The 3cc, 5cc dilution wasn't working. I swore never to touch that thing. And the red kept coming, and I just, I'm a nice guy. So I'm like, okay, let me go home and see what is positive about Sculptra. And I had a long list of all the things that I didn't like, but I had one little thing that it was noticeable. And you couldn't argue that everybody came with this beautiful skin, this Sculptra glow. So like, okay, well, I'm gonna use it to thicken people's skin that don't wanna do lasers, maybe just skin conditioning. But because I was afraid of the nodules that we would get at a time because we injected too superficial or into a muscle on the face, I was really super periosteal. And then patients started coming back and they look years younger. And that spiked my interest for it. And I started learning more. And I was following Danny Vegler in every lecture and Becky Fitzgerald because I wanted to know more. And for the first time ever in my whole medical career, and even my residency, because during the residency, they didn't have any aesthetics training. I learned that part of getting older is that you lose the bone on your face. You have bone loss, bone remodeling. And when you get bone loss, bone remodeling, you look elderly. It's the elderly version of yourself. Yeah. So I started to do Sculptra super periosteal because of that. And including all this is so fake. But I made it myself.
You've done a beautiful job. So you've used Sculptra for your own face, right?
Yeah, I started when I was 37. I lost a lot of my volume. I've always been thin, and I was a runner. So by 37, I was just gone, like very gone. And I started using since then, and I do a vial every year and a half to maintain all the areas. I don't touch this part because I have, I'm part Asian and Native Indian, so I have big cheekbones. But a lot of this here and through here, so I don't look so gone.
The jawline, yeah, that's perfect. You look very well maintained, I have to say. I wish we could get more men to do the maintenance like you're doing, because you don't look 52, that's for sure.
Thank you.
What is your pet peeve of something you don't like when you see on an injected face?
I don't like when I can't tell that when I can see the filler. Yeah. I like everything natural. So if I can tell that the patient have fillers, it's just overdone. Like, I like everything to look natural. I mean, I don't care if the lips are really big, as long that it looks like it belongs on that face, right? Not everybody can carry big lips like Angelina Jolie, right? She didn't have these big muscles. Those lips on her would not be as attractive and she won't be as attractive, but she just happens to have big muscles and she just carries it beautifully. And somebody with those features, I don't care if she's Caucasian or Latina or African, if she carries features that, yeah, you can make it as big as you want. Well, I don't like, on my thread when I see what the Russian injectors are doing to these absolutely gorgeous girls, you know, like they're gorgeous and their lips look so fake that it feels like if I go, it's gonna burst. That's what I don't like, you know. And I'm all for expressing yourself and do that, but it's just like keep it to a size that is like. You want to kiss those lips, like, you know, you want to make out with those lips, you know? But not like I want to stay away because I'm afraid that they're going to feel hard or they're going to hurt.
They're going to pop if you touch them.
They look like blow up dolls.
They have to be biteable, a little bit of a nibble.
Something that you know, the reason why women wear red lipstick, right? Because, you know, you have to do with you know, attracting it, but sexual and we look at the lips and we find them very attractive, the kissable or not. And but if the lips are just so big that you're just afraid of them.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
what do you think is the most under-injected area that people need that they're not getting done?
I think for me is the ramus of the jaw.
Oh, really? Okay. I would say temples.
Well, temple too. So I think those two, which is the same technique, depo and depo, right? Those two.
Yeah.
I was going to say the temple as my second choice. But the ramus of the jaw, the young people are doing it because they want, it's trendy, right?
Yeah.
But when the ramus is starting to move retrograde, inwards, all because we have this angle, all the skin ends up here. So older people, they need to preserve that ramus or imitate it more than the young. But unfortunately, when I do a lot of the job, the young people that don't need it, they just want to enhance. For the older people, I have to convince them that I need to go there. Because they're like, no, don't put it there, just put it here. But I go, no, we need to work in here because this is coming from here. So I think that's something that is not well understood by the generation that actually need to be worked on in that area.
Yeah, it's all, when it's placed well, it's almost really like a liquid lift, and I think it does pull back the gel quite nicely.
No, no, that's me. That this over here is all Sculptra and Radius because I clench bruxism, which I like to talk about bruxism. Anywhere that I have a platform, I talk about clenching and grinding because everybody's doing it more and more because everything that's going on in the world. But 15 years ago, I was diagnosed, and I said, this dentist wants just my money because look at my teeth, they're perfect.
Yeah.
So I thought that bruxism or clenching was grinding and my teeth should look terrible. But no, I just do this at night. So what happened? I started getting root canals and the bone disintegrated to the point that my neck and my jawline was becoming one unit. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that on a video. And so I had to recreate it. I tried to do neurotoxins, but what happens is that I became very alien-like. My forehead, I look like one of those aliens, you know, I just needed to be painted green. It got too small, it got very small, and I jaw because right. This volume shrunk because the masseter shrunk. And then I jaw, I mean, when you're doing a 30-something, 20-something, that's not gonna happen. But a 50-something, I was like 45 when I did it. I jaw, so the pain went away. I look very feminine. I look like an alien. I show on my lecture of bruxism, I show my picture because I did a photo shoot.
Yeah.
And I look like an alien.
Oh my gosh. Well, it definitely slims sometimes too drastically and you get much worse jowling with that. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And then do you have an area that you think is over-injected? Probably lips, I would guess, or cheeks, right?
Lips and cheeks. And, you know, we gotten better, you know, like I remember back in the day at the Academy of Dermatology where everyone was over-injected. It was like the Twilight Zone. It was scary. And then when I would go to an international meeting, I was in France, and people go, you Americans, you make people look like animals. And I didn't know how to defend myself because it was true. And it happens to the best of us. Listen, I show a picture of me, like somebody this culture of me. I was like this.
Yeah.
I needed wings to come out of my neck and put on a church. Because I'm like a cherub. It's incredible. So, but I learned my lesson, you know, is we live on earth.
Are you doing sculpture for butts? I love that. That's working great. And I also do faces, but in California, well, also in Florida, I'm sure the butts injections are popular, right?
Yeah, but Latino women love butts, big butts. And so we do, I don't do tons of it, but I do a fair amount of it. But yeah, it's something that, the reason I don't do it because a lot of people, they get a little bit discouraged with how they have to maintain it. So they don't want to maintain it anymore. But we have some people that they just can't live without it. You know, you can't, once you have it, you cannot go back to be flat, you know?
Yeah.
So but definitely does a beautiful job.
It definitely does. Well, Shino, it's been so lovely chatting with you. I can't wait to see you again, hopefully in person at a meeting someday somewhere, if we ever get to travel and do meetings in person again. But if not, at least virtually.
We will.
We will, right? We have hope. I hope so.
I'm picking up a day for the Life Warriors to come back. And we're going to do it maybe once a month now. I just thought that people were getting busy at work, and I wanted to make sure that it didn't feel like a burden, but it certainly felt amazing to be able to connect with you and your sister, everybody else. Since we were in isolation, sometimes when you speak to your peers, things seem brighter and everything makes more sense. And it was the most brilliant minds in the world there, including you. So everything that was said was meaningful, and it really, really helped me endure the pain of being in isolation and the uncertainty of how I was going to come out of this.
Yeah, you're such a social person, and you're the center of attraction and attention at every meeting. So it was really important to talk to you, and I can't wait to post this podcast so that injectors all across the world can learn a little bit more about you. Where can people find you on your social handles?
So my personal Instagram is at Shino Bay, and then, you know, usually those are my meditation, my personal life. And then you want to see, because sometimes people always like, how come you don't have any before and after anything what you do? You go, because this is my personal social media. You want to go to Shino Bay Derm, and you could see that I'm also on Facebook, but I don't respond on Facebook because I only respond on Instagram. I just don't have time to do both.
There's not enough hours in the day for all the things you do. I don't know how you do it, the lecturing, the research, the traveling, the being a role model for all of us, but you're an amazing person, so beautiful inside and out. So thank you again for coming on the podcast. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram, doing amazing things with people's faces, at Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y, and our website is the same, www.beautybydrk.com. Can't wait to see you at another meeting. Shino, stay beautiful.